wanted the best, you've got the best podcast. The hottest podcast in the world. The Chris Voss Show, the preeminent podcast with guests so smart you may experience serious brain bleed. The CEOs, authors, thought leaders, visionaries, and motivators. Get ready. Strap yourself in. Keep your hands, arms, and legs inside the vehicle at all times, because you're about to go on a monster education roller coaster with your brain. Now, here's your host, Chris Voss.
Hi, folks. It's Voss here from thechrisvossshow.com.
The Chris Voss Show.
There you go. She wanted some clapping before we went into it, so there you go. The Iron Lady makes it official when she's singing. There you go. As always, folks, we have the most brilliant minds on the shows. The great authors bring you their stories, their lessons of life, or what we call the owner's manual to life, on all their journeys they've done. The Pulitzer Prize winners, the entrepreneurs, the CEOs, the billionaires, the White House presidential advisors, the astronauts, the rock stars, you name it, they've all been on the show. And we bring you 2 to 3 shows a day to bring you what we call the Netflix of podcasting. If you can't find something to binge on the Chris Voss Show with 10 to 15 new shows a week, you got a problem, man. I'm like, serious, seek some help. Anyway, guys, for the show, your family, friends, and relatives, go to goodreads.com/Chris Voss, linkedin.com/Chris Voss, follow the big LinkedIn newsletter and 130,000 group over there. Follow, of course, Chris Voss 1 on the Tickety Talkity as well. We have an amazing gentleman on the show. He's going to expand your mind and liberate your positivity. Liberate your positivity? Liberate your negativity. I don't know. He's going to make your mind better. A mind clearly need. See, that's why he's on the show, because I need all the help I can get on a Friday here. His new book is called Straight Out of the Trailer Park, which is, I think that's where I was born. Straight Out of the Trailer Park, How Mindset and Perseverance Enabled One Man to Overcome His Poor White Trash Upbringing and Live a Fulfilling Life. It came out January 12, 2024. Lloyd Hawkins joins us on the show. We'll be talking to him about his opus magnum of coming out of a trailer park. He is a motivational speaker, consultant, and certified executive coach who values dedication, service, and excellence, and double wides. As a decorated combat veteran, he brings unique perspectives gained from his military experience to your organization, empowering you to unleash the untapped potential of your employees. I was kidding about the double wide part. I added that. He is irreverent and funny and brings unique insight to the dynamics of corporate and personal relationships. He helps companies define causes of conflict and brings effective views on how to de-escalate. That's usually with weapons, right? No, maybe not. We'll find out. Effective relationship building is where Lloyd's experience and insight shine through, and he sheds light on how the invaluable talent each person brings to your organization can positively impact your mission. Welcome to the show, Lloyd. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Chris. Thanks for having me, and great intro. I really appreciate it.
There you go. I mean, it's your bio, man. You did all the work. I just read it off.
You would think I wrote that myself.
Yeah. I love your, and those of you not watching on YouTube, he has the lamp from, what was the Christmas story? The Christmas story, yeah. He has the lamp, the French lamp. Yeah. The with the legs. So there you go. Are you married?
I am. Been married 35 years, actually.
Okay, yeah. That's why your life will let you have that 35 years. Okay. So give us your .coms. Where can people find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, my business website is KeenEyeBusinessSolutions.com. That's Kenai, spelled Kenia, BusinessSolutions.com. And that's my professional website where I list all of my products, a few of my speaking engagements, and really my mission and my focus.
There you go. What does Kenai mean?
So, Chris, I am a gigantic advocate of the state of Alaska. When I was a young man, 22 years old, my wife and I trekked up there. I spent 4 years there living in Fairbanks, Alaska, in the military. I loved it so much. I go back every year. It's part of my soul. So when I was thinking about naming my business, going through a lot of machinations about that, I landed on something I'm very passionate about, and that's the state of Alaska. I take people up there fishing every year. Professional guide service, and just share that love of that state with everyone.
There you go, Alaska. It'd be a beautiful thing. I've gotten my huskies from there. In fact, one of my my first Husky was a granddaughter of an Iditarod racer, and I always wanted to go up and boy, she was something else too. She was pretty much a wolf, but I always wanted to go up there and watch the Iditarod, maybe racing. No, I didn't want to do that. I hate the cold, but I always wanted to go up there and watch the Iditarod races. Of course, be around lots of Huskies and, you know, where that whole thing originated from. So there you go. Beautiful landscape.
Just ended recently. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing is I grew up in California on the beach, so I have laws against being cold in any way, shape, or form.
Funny you mentioned that. So I live in Florida. I'm a Florida boy.
Oh, yeah.
I live 50 miles from the ocean, and I hate the cold weather, but I risk it all because I love Alaska.
There you go. It's a beautiful place. Plus, there's less crazy people than there are in Florida, so you got that. There's no Alaska man you ever see in the news. There's none of that. So
there may be an equivalent to Florida man up there. I don't know.
There might be, I suppose. Maybe if you get cabin fever or something. Or maybe, I don't know.
They're a very independent, hardy, pioneering bunch.
There you go. I always wanted to do one of those bush pilot things. You know, those guys that do the crazy bush pilots where they can land on an iceberg and take off.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's crazy. Or land on a riverbank and drop you off and haul ass back.
Yeah. So give us a 30,000 overview of your book, Straight Out of the Trailer Park.
Sure. This book is all about resilience, and I spin it with stories of my life. I grew up extremely poor, single mother, been married multiple times. Most of my life, Chris, I never had not only a bed to sleep on, but not a room to sleep in. I slept on a couch. I had an older sister and a younger sister, and they took priority over any kind of living conditions in the trailer. I wrote this book to talk a little bit about leadership, resiliency, and how to overcome obstacles, but also pepper it with stories of my life about how these challenges came up in front of me and how I overcame them and what you can do, what everybody can do to change your life. Chris, I always tell everybody, if you work a little bit harder every day, you might not be where I am. You might not be where Chris is, but you'll be better than you were yesterday. And that's what it's all about for me. Continual learning and continual growth. And I think that everyone has that in them. They just got to focus on it.
There you go. So you grew up in poverty, the only child of a single mother. And then you mentioned a lot of divorces. Was that your mom or you?
My mother. I've only been married one time. I got married when I was 22, and people say that's kind of early, but that was just 10 more years I got to spend with my wonderful wife, right?
There you go.
But my mother had been married 5 times, yes.
Wow. There you go. 5 times. Yeah. Well, I'm still working on my first divorce.
Most of them were abusive relationships, Chris. She's been married here to her recent husband for the past 25 years, I think that was going to stick.
There you go. You know, 5 times charm, they say, I think, in marriage. So I'm still planning my first divorce, using my pickup line when I go into bars is, hey, honey, you want to be my first ex-wife? So actually, that's the line. They come look around the house and they're like, you got some money and can I be your first ex-wife? For that, for a lot of models. You go into the Army. Talk to us about this. I mean, were you a troubled child? Were you having issues because you didn't have a father in your life, as you talk about in the book? And the Army gave you some structure, or?
Yeah, 100%, Chris. Regardless of where you fall on the spectrum politically, there's no doubt in my mind that to have an effective relationship with your children, especially male children, is to have a male role model in the house. A strong male role model. And I never had that. I had abusive stepfathers that would, hit me and discipline me inappropriately. A lot of times because I ran my mouth, I had it coming. but because of that, I had no real male leadership or even boundary setting. When I dropped out of high school when I was 16, like an idiot, but then joined the Army a couple of years later. And that really gave me a lot of a structure. But what it also gave me was the ability to see that I could succeed in a structured environment. So the military has certain schools you go to, certain obstacles you got to overcome. And when you meet those goals, it really gives you a lot of self-confidence. So it allowed me to have a structure, not only to put discipline around my life, but a structure to help me learn to win.
Ah, there you go. And there's nothing like our military. We have one of the greatest militaries in the world, in part because of the way we structure leadership, the way the military structure in its hierarchy. We've had a lot of, different people from West Point to people who have run battleships on the show and aircraft carriers and top people in the military. And I'm just always just extraordinarily amazed at the competency level of how our military teaches leadership. I mean, it really is. And I really didn't even understand it as much as I did until I saw the leadership structure of the Russian army in Ukraine. and you just see what a mess that is by having a different, yeah. a completely different structure where if you cut one head off, the downline can't operate, where ours is very different. And so the military is just so great at it. And it's one of the reasons we have the best military in the world, and hopefully we always will, knock on wood. So there you go. So after you come into the military, what happens then?
After I left the military or when I was in there?
After you, if you got more to tell me about what was in there, that we'd love to
hear. Yeah, let me expand on a couple points you made there. So first of all, I'm 58 years old. And I look back at these kids in the military now. You have a 24-year-old as a tank commander. I'm astounded how young these kids are, but they're so professional, so professional. Yeah. And it's just amazing to me. They're babies, but they're still the best trained military in the world and best led military in the world. And what the Army teaches you specifically, it demands of you is to take leadership. It teaches you leadership, but it requires that you take it. If you don't take leadership, you'll be forced out. It is the best leadership program in the world as far as teaching and applying leadership. Mm-hmm. And then thirdly, you're right. You cut off the head of a Russian soldier's officer, the whole body dies. One of the things that the Germans said about the American military, why we were so dangerous, is because we would always fail to follow our own doctrine, which means we were very mobile and agile and lethal when it comes to doctrine, which means it doesn't matter what the book says, you do what works. The Russian military is the exact opposite, and so is the German military. But when I was in the Army, I was able to flourish. My second duty station, I was assigned to the 101st Airborne Division, and I got to go through some special schools. But putting that Screaming Eagle patch on your left shoulder, Chris, really means something. It meant something then, it means something today. And that really gave me a pathway to success. And then I went to a couple of units until I joined the 5th Special Forces Group, where I went to jump school and had some more special training. And I went to a school called SEER School, which stands for Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. It's a POW camp. It teaches you, if you get caught, how to survive and how to survive with honor.
It was my first 10 marriages.
Exactly. It was the best school I ever went to. And was it abusive and was it rough? 100%. I mean, they would strip you naked. They would smack you around a little bit.
That was my first 10 marriages.
Yeah, but I loved it when I came out. But after that, you know, I was a staff sergeant, and I had a wife and three children, and I was just not making enough money. So I finished my undergraduate when I was in the Army and got out with the FSU, Florida State, for my master's program. And I have an MBA from FSU. And after that, I started working consulting, and I had some requirements for what I wanted to do. And basically, there was that I always wanted to be a lifelong learner. I wanted to be challenged, and I had to be able to be in a speaking role. One of the things I've always been told all my life is just shut up, right? But the fact of the matter, that's my gift. Whether it came from Vishnu, Buddha, God, Oprah Winfrey, I don't know, but I have it. They're trying to hide that light under a bushel. And frankly, I didn't have anybody mentor me to help me really be able to express myself. Mm-hmm. So consulting is what I went into. I can talk to customers, tell them how to do things better.
There you go. And, you know, the military folks we have, I mean, they really are, in my mind, undervalued in our society. You know, not only with the leadership skills that they've learned and been ingrained in them in our military, but I mean, they're in charge of billions of dollars in equipment. And, you know, and other people's lives. It's not just like they're protecting the copier at work. They've been guarding everyone else's life and watching everyone else's back in the office, technically, you know, in their office, if you will. Yeah. And I'm just, we've had a lot of military folks on this thing, and we've talked about, you know, the military folks that are homeless and jobless and things like that. And I'm just like, we really should value them more, just for their, not only for their leadership, but I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure you can trust a military guy with a copier if we trusted him with a $1 billion Abrams tank. You know, I'm sure it's going to be fine.
Agreed.
So there you go. So now you've built your consulting business. How many years have you been doing this now? Consulting?
I've been working in consulting 22 years. Wow. Yeah, so I'm starting to get the hang of it.
And you do this through your systems there. Any other tease outs of the book before we get into some of the other work that you do that you want to tease out to people? Actually, there was one question I had. I knew there was something I had up in my can. Never satisfied. Is a kind of a motto or a watchword that you use in the book. Is that right?
That's correct. And like I said, I'm a lifelong learner. that, you know, I went from dropping out of high school to having a master's degree. And I really credit that to doing a lot of reading as a kid. As a young child, I always dreamt of, you know, living these whirlwind fantasies around adventures. And I used to read Field & Stream magazine and Outdoor Life magazine. I don't think they're published now. I would read them voraciously, cover to cover. It gave me a very broad vocabulary and allowed me to really set higher goals. But that, I'm saying that to say this, is that being a lifelong learner and never being satisfied is a goal that we should all have, right? Because comfort wants you dead. Comfort is where dreams go to die. So an example of that, I was out in Alcatraz doing the Alcatraz tour like we all do when we go to San Francisco. And, you know, I'm sitting there on the rock, and I'm looking over San Francisco Bay. I'm like, I told my wife, I said, I can make that swim. And she looked at me and said, oh, yeah? Then do it. So 2 years later, COVID hit and I had an injury. But 2 years later, I jumped into icy water right off Alcatraz rock, swam my tail all the way to San Francisco. It was the worst hour and a half of my life. And I could barely stand up when I got out of it. But I was 56 years old. And again, never satisfied means putting stretch goals in front of yourself and then striving to meet them.
There you go. The obstacle is the way through, as it were. I love 100%. That. But when you said 56, I'm 56. I just turned 56 in January, and I'm not even doing that. I might do some laps in the jacuzzi, but that's about it. We're not swimming Alcatraz. That is some cold ass water, and I think there's sharks too.
There's the water 61 degrees, and it looks like a big bucket of iced tea. I looked at a video of the where they drop you off right beside the rock. They don't put you on the rocks. It's too dangerous. But I looked at a video of where they dropped you off. In 2018, in the summertime, not during the swim, a white shark took a seal right where we jumped off. Right. So, yeah. So there are sharks in the water. But, again, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained, right?
There you go. Your wife must have a hell of a life insurance policy on you. That's all I got
to
say.
You know, dude, when you get to our age, you have a ton of stories. So I was skydiving a few years ago in 2018, and I had a parachute malfunction. I jump out of 14,000 feet. I'm flying around. I pull my parachute, and I have a malfunction. My wife said, maybe you shouldn't do that anymore. So she put the kibosh on that. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so she gets her way with me. But, again, always trying to have stretch goals, dude. I work out a lot. If you ask somebody, they may think I have a boring life because I work out a lot. I read a lot. I'm a black belt Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And it's all about just accomplishing things and trying to stretch myself.
There you go. There you go. And never be satisfied. You know, it's very unlike that Rolling Stones song, you can't always get what you want, but you get what you need. So I think that's the difference there. So talk about some of the services you offer on your website, some of the consulting you do, and some of the things that we find on there.
Sure. There are several services, right? The first one is public speaking. If anyone was interested in hearing an irreverent tale of a kid that grew up in a trailer park who had zero chance of success, zero outlook on being successful, I'd love to talk to you. It's 30 minutes, 45 minutes to an hour. It addresses not only my story, but leadership and communications with an organization. I can talk a little bit more about that in a second. Second thing is that I do executive one-on-one coaching for small businesses. I had a meeting at lunch today where a lady's doing a teaching website, and she had a bunch of questions around how to set up her organization, where to find a CFO, where to find a marketing director, things of that nature. So I advise small businesses on those things as well. And a lot of that brings me joy. I get more out of the public speaking, Chris, than anything else, because I love having an effect on people. I'm a natural entertainer. Maybe not be funny to some people, but I'm funny to myself, and that's all that matters. So that's my love, and I do that out of love. Mm. It's nice to monetize anything, but if you do something that you really love, the money will follow.
There you go. I mean, that is really true because, you know, it finding something you love makes all the difference. It's not work anymore. You tend to excel at it. And, you know, for years with all my companies, I was like, I like being the CEO and I like being the innovator and I like doing the stuff, but I don't like anything I do. And that made a real difference in my motivation. You know, the companies did well. But when you're passionate about something, when you do something you love, where, you know, I would do this, you wouldn't have to pay me for it. You know, when you can live that way, it makes all the difference in excelling and what you care about. I mean, it just really turns the key. And usually when I coach entrepreneurs, I tell them that, find something you love to do. don't do something that, you know, you think everyone else should do, or, and, you know, everyone's doing it because it's the in thing. Find what your passion is that really turns you on and lights you up.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's OnlyFans. No, I'm just kidding.
OnlyFans watching or creating content?
Both. Anyway, that's a good callback joke on the show, the OnlyFans callback. You do some coaching too. Let's talk about that as well.
Yeah, so I get a lot of customers who are struggling with interpersonal relationships. I am mainly more of a man-to-man coach, even though I do coach women as well, about interpersonal relationships. I'm a strong believer in the male-female dynamic. And by the way, I have a daughter I love, and I would not want anyone to tell her she couldn't do anything because of her gender. But I do think there are specific roles. And again, adhere to those if you want or not. I don't care. It's my viewpoint, and I think it works. Let me give you an example, Chris, is that most divorces at our age are initiated by women. 80% of divorces in America are initiated by women. And the reason is because women get to a point where they feel unsatisfied. They feel like their lives left behind them. They also have boring husbands that they browbeat, and the husbands allow them to do that. So What I tell men who are married, if you feel like you're in that situation, let me give you one really quick point of view to help you get out of that situation and really assert yourself as the leader of the relationship. Not to say that women aren't good leaders or can't be good leaders, but when it's a male and female, it should be the male that's the leader. And that means don't tell women what to do. It means to support your wife, nurture her, shelter her, and protect her. But if you're in a situation where you feel like there's a dynamic there that's not satisfied for you, here it is, Chris. This is golden. Never ride in the passenger seat of your wife's car.
That's true.
Ever. And you may say, what do you mean, Lloyd? Now, if you're inebriated, all by all means, don't drive drunk, right? But you always drive that car, yeah, always drive the car. And if someone tells you, and they've told me, it's my ex, my wife's, my girlfriend's car, then tell her you'll meet her there. But you never subordinate yourself to that position. Now, I recorded a video on this and posted it online, and my wife was in the passenger side, flipped me in a bird. I said, you know what? She's flipped me in a bird for a passenger. She's flipped me in a bird for the passenger seat. So that being said, Chris, what I do is I talk to people about their interpersonal relationships. I also coach people on the fact that most men live a life of quiet desperation. That's what Thoreau wrote a long time ago. So I coach them out of their shells, and we put sustainable and achievable, but also aggressive milestones in front of them and make sure they meet them. Because what some people need more than anything is accountability. Self-accountability is great. Self-motivation is great. Discipline is the most important thing. So I try to provide that as well.
There you go. You know, what I do when if I'm drunk and I need to get home, I just have the mistress drive me home and sit in the passenger seat. So that's what you do.
Does she drop you over or does she take you aside?
Which one? What?
The mistress.
The mistress? She takes me home. I'll let her drive. But that's only when I'm drunk.
At least you're being safe.
Yeah. Sometimes we just, you know, my wife sits in the back on that one. Yeah, that'll work. Hey, hasn't Chris ever been married? Oh, we can see that. No, but what you're talking about is the masculine, feminine. And there's definitely a portion for that where women want a man to act in his masculine frame and create frame. And that's part of what you're talking about with sitting in the leadership position, sitting at the head of the table. And women want you to be in the masculine frame, unless she's got a lot of trauma that she just can't operate safely. And then at that point, you need to see therapy. But so that's what you're talking about. I'm not sure a lot of men can recover the loss of respect once it's lost and reestablish that frame. To my experience, once you've lost frame and you've lost respect, you're never going to get back from one. I don't know. Maybe you find that you're able to coach people back into the leadership role. Maybe.
Yeah. So that's a great point, right? So in the event that you're at a decision point at that point, right? If you feel like you've lost your leadership position from your wife or girlfriend, whomever, and they don't respect you, you may want to look at moving on because you'll never get that respect back. Another example of that would be that, as studies have shown, that if a woman makes more than a man, the use of ED pills goes up 50%. If a woman makes $100,000 more than her husband, divorce rate's 90%. Yeah. Right. So you'll lose frame very quickly that way. But if you feel like you've lost frame, you can't get it back.
Yeah.
And you can't live in that environment anymore, it's time to move on. I'm not advocating divorce for anybody. What I'm saying is men step up and lead and when you need to, make sure you're doing that. And again, you can do that incrementally. If you can't get a divorce, if you don't want to get a divorce, go to counseling, right? But men are so afraid of telling people how they feel. It's all about the woman's feeling. I feel this way. I don't feel that way. No, a man never says, well, I don't feel appreciated when they should. It's very, very hard, like you said, to get that back once it's gone. And sometimes you can't. So you got to move on. But in the meantime, work on yourself.
Definitely. Definitely. You got to make yourself the best version that you possibly can. And you've got to stay there as a man. That's what society expects. That's what your woman expects. You always have to be developing. You have to be constantly improving yourself. That's just the manifest destiny of what being a man is about. And some people look at that as like, oh my God, what a burden. And it's like not. It's actually the greatest position to be in. There's a reason we built and run the world.
That's right. It's
because we were natural born leaders, and we're biologically designed to do that. We're not solipsistic. We see the visions that others don't see because we don't live in a selfish world. And so there is a difference, you know. Anytime somebody tells me we're equal, I want to punch them in the face because it's the biggest lie that's ever there. It's not.
At least you didn't say punch her in the face.
Right? No, I usually want to punch the guy in the face. I never punch a woman in the face. But, you know, it's one of those things. So, yeah, the masculine and feminine. And women, you know, there's a lot of talk about this nowadays because women can't find masculine men. You hear it all the time. They equate it where they say, we can't find the good men. And all the nice simps are going running around going, I'm nice. You can walk all over me and I'll do whatever you want and grovel at your feet. And that's not what women want. You know, that's really important. It's a real struggle and interesting place now. But, you know, you're an example of that in your life. You're always making yourself better. You're always proving yourself. You're always stretching. And that's probably why your wife keeps you around, doesn't want you jumping out of planes. You know, she hasn't got too interested in the pool boy in the back there. Yeah, there's still time.
So, dude, I like to say I'm the Antichrist. I'm 6'6". I'm 6'3". I have a six-pack, and I make over six figures.
Right? There you go. The three sixes.
That's although right.
I think when women refer to the three sixes, the third six is a different six. But if you're over 6 foot, you probably have that, too.
That's true.
How big are your feet? That'll tell you everything.
Yeah,
but I should know. I'm 6'2" and 14-inch feet. What do you find most people are struggling with? You consult with nowadays. What's some of the big topics that you find that when people come to you, they're just like, "Hey, man, this is a real popular thing that people are trying to overcome."
For men, Chris, it's accountability and it's internalization, right? It's introspection. All the rest of it is icing on the cake. It's all smoke and mirrors. But until you are willing to say that I am lacking, that I need help, that I need to improve, nothing will ever change. You can buy the nicest suit, and if you're still 400 pounds and 5'2", it's still not going to look good. You got to have a fundamental mindset of one thing, first of all, that you are the prize. And it might not be a price to anyone else, but you are a price to yourself. Yeah. I have a friend of mine who struggles with this, and he always says, I wish my wife loved me as much as you love yourself. And I reply always to him, why wouldn't I love myself? I should be my best advocate. Now, like you said before, some people might think that's arrogant. It's not arrogant. It's the truth. So men struggle with the fact that they are lazy and don't want to admit that they can improve. I am 45 now. I have a wife. She, even though she's domineering to me, I don't need to work out. I don't need to dress well. I don't need to read. I don't need to improve myself. And you're slowly killing yourself. Yeah. And the whole thing is they don't want to admit that they need this stuff. They say, well, I can't be like you, Lloyd, or you're an arrogant jerk, whatever. But you know what though? Their wives all lust for me. So take it for what it is. So
I've seen his DMs, ladies and gentlemen. I've seen the DMs of all the wives DMing Lloyd. So there you go.
There was a famous philosopher. I always liked the cool quote, Chris. He said, if you look good, you play good. And if you play good, if you look good, you feel good. If you feel good, you play good. And if you play good, they pay good. That was Deion Sanders.
There you go. Well, Deion would know, man. He's a good looking man. He kicks ass and takes names.
Exactly. So I always tell everybody, work on yourself, lose some weight, buy decent fitting clothes. And when you stand up in front of people, you'll feel better about yourself. And frankly, we are all salespeople. We're selling something to each other or to ourselves. And mainly what we're selling is ourselves to the public. And why wouldn't you want to always put your best foot forward?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of men have gotten lost in the emotionalism that's been sold to them over the last 2 to 3 generations. And they talk in emotion about emotions. They emote emotions, you know, and what's been lost is a man's value is what he gives to the world and society. And women are born into their value. They're pretty and cute, and everyone who likes them and loves them from the birth. Women, children, and pets get unconditional love. Men do not. And, you know, when I heard you say earlier when the guy's like, I wish my wife would love me, blah, blah, blah. Hey, that's the way of the world. The only person who's going to love you as a man is yourself and your dog. So if you want love, an unconditional love, get a dog. That's why it's called man's best friend. This is the only thing in this world except for maybe your mother, but even then she's going to kick your ass sometimes because she wants you to succeed and fulfill your manifest destiny as a man. And that's what we do. Well, I mean, when you really think about it, a woman's born into her value. Her highest sexual market value is at 23. And for a man, we're worthless. I mean, 18 to 20, 18 to 30, we're pretty much worthless. I mean, we have to build something. You know, even old men come to you and go, what do you know how to do? Nothing. I don't just graduate. What are you good at? Nothing. So why should we take you out hunting? You know, you've got to learn your way. And so you have to build yourself as a man. And the peak sexual dating market value of a man is guess what age? 55. In his 50s. That's when we earn the most. That's when we're the most successful. That's when we've worked the hardest all of our life. We finally got our game down. We're at our top earning potential. Women are beauty resources. Men are resource. Women are beauty valued. Men are resource valued. So we're valued for how much we can earn, how much we can provide, how much we can give back to society, how much we can provide for a family, our children, et cetera, et cetera. That's what we're valued for. You know, yeah. And hypergamy plays into that. You know, you mentioned that once a man's wife starts earning more than him, 90% of the time she's going to file a divorce, especially if she's educated with a college degree. And the reason is her hypergamous nature goes, this man is not the best I can do because I earn more than him. And that's always going to kick in, that hypergamous nature. And women constantly ask themselves, is this the best I can do? And that's why you always have to improve yourself, like what you talk about as a man, because she needs to go, he's improving himself. He's making himself better. He is a good investment for me and my family. And it's all about propagation of the species crap when it comes down to it. It's always about getting the best DNA and the best propagation of the species, the best children, making sure the children have the best resources. It's been going on for eons of time. If you read like 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene, you understand why eons of human history have this human nature of feminine and masculine in them.
Yeah, and no matter how our current society tries to frame it, it's biological. You can't get away from it.
It is biological. So, it's not. People will be like, it's a social construct. No, it isn't. No, this is millions of years of human evolution, and it does not change overnight. And you see that now. You see that now where people, you know, I'll see women that are like, you know, we want, you know, even the most hardened feminist will go move into a paternal partnership role. Even women that you see are single are still going to church because they love a patriarchy. They love knowing that a man is always overlooking them. It's, you know, they'll say one thing, but watch what they do, not what they say.
Exactly.
And so really people are always seeking leadership. They're always seeking a masculine patriarchy, whether you like it or not. They subscribe to it. I know women that are feminists, and guess what? They're married to a man who makes more than them and provides more. It's always kind of weird how that works out.
Yeah,
and he sits in the driver's seat.
Yeah, and you notice there's no feminists on roofs. There's no feminist roofers feminist bricklayers.
Never see him in the sewers. Never see him on the back of the garbage trucks. It's always interesting, the non-air conditioned jobs.
And by the way, Chris, that being said, I love women. They are exquisite unicorns that I love. I love everything about women. And I can tell you, anyone I meet, I found something that I found attractive. But I also love myself, right? And the way to have a great relationship with a woman is to be a man, and also, and I'm sure you know this, is to have the ability to walk away. because that's all you can do. Now, again, I've been married 36 years. Wife and I have had all kinds of ups and downs, but she understands her role. I understand my role, and it works out very, very well.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Any final thoughts as we go out? Tell people how to pick up your book and how to onboard with you, how they can maybe reach out, book a call, sure, or whatever, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So you can buy my book. Right there it is, straight out of Trailer Park. There's only one L in my name. So my mother was very, very conservative with her language, apparently. But so just go to Amazon.com and type in the title, Straight Out of the Trailer Park. Click enter and you'll find it. Secondly, Chris, my website, Kenai Business Solutions, is another way to reach me. There's email links there. And again, what I'd like to leave the your audience with is one thing, is that if you continuously improve, you will get better, but it's also incremental. So you need to have discipline, not motivation. And I always love this saying that the first thing the gazelle does when he gets up in the morning, he runs so he doesn't get eaten by the lion. The first thing the lion does in the morning, he gets up and chases the gazelle so he can eat. So what's the moral of the story? Doesn't matter if you're a gazelle or a lion, get your butt up and start running, right? So all the talk we do, it falls on deaf ears unless there's some hustle behind the muscle.
Definitely, definitely. And there you go. So thank you very much, Lloyd, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here.
There you go. Thanks, audience, for tuning in. Order up the book wherever fine books are sold, Straight Out of the Trailer Park, How Mindset and Perseverance Enabled One Man to Overcome His Poor White Trash Upbringing and Live a Fulfilling Life. Hopefully you can give some inspirations. If you grew up without a father or mother in your home and you feel like you're missing some of that part, I love stories like this because they can give inspiration to people that need those role models. And, of course, the military is just so great. Thanks for tuning in. Be good to each other. Stay safe. And we'll see you guys next time.